Hi, welcome back to the Dirr Show. I just finished watching the end, I guess, of the confirmation hearings for Justice to be Jackson. She will be confirmed. She'll be confirmed with at least 52 of 53 votes. I'm curious as to whether Senator Sasse will vote for her. He was very, very friendly to her, but he's Republican. Whether or not some of the other senators will vote for him, or whether it'll her, or whether it'll be a straight party line vote. I thought she did extremely well. I was angry at her for one thing. That's just my particular bias as a criminal defense lawyer. She seemed very defensive about the people she represented. Oh, I was assigned to represent the people in Guantanamo. No, I didn't volunteer. I was assigned. And when I went to the law firm, a partner picked me to write this brief because I had previously represented somebody from Guantanamo. What if she had said, I volunteer to represent the people of Guantanamo. Yes, they're accused of terrorism, but they're entitled to a defense, and I'm proud to have defended them. That's certainly what I would have said. I've been saying it all my life. Yes, I was proud to represent O.J. Simpson. I was proud to represent Klaus von Bülow. I was proud to represent all the people I've represented, half of them on a pro bono basis, half of them, more than half of them, people you've never heard of. That's the job of a criminal defense lawyer. I guess her handlers in the White House insisted that she be apologetic. No, I don't blame me for my clients. I have no choice. I had to do it. I was assigned. And if you're assigned, you're not responsible. I don't have to be assigned. I wasn't assigned to defend President Trump. I did it proudly, despite the fact that I voted against him twice and didn't approve of his politics, didn't approve of his January 6th speech. That doesn't mean I don't defend him. Just like the doctor in an emergency ward, you don't ask somebody their politics when you decide to give them an x-ray or decide to give them an injection or decide to have surgery on them. That's what you do if you're an emergency room doctor, and that's what you do if you're a civil libertarian or a criminal defense lawyer. You don't hang up a sign, criminal defense lawyer, Democrat, criminal defense lawyer, Republican. There's a famous case in Massachusetts that makes that point. There was a woman lawyer, and she only defended women, and she was a matrimonial lawyer. And one day, a guy went into her office and said, I want you to defend me. She said, I only defend women. And the guy said, look, you have to understand, in this case, I am like a woman. It wasn't a transgender case, nothing like that. He was a nurse, making a couple of $100 a week. And he was married to a woman who was a surgeon. She was making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and she ran off with the another surgeon, and he was seeking alimony, and he was in the position that most women have been in similar situations. He put her through medical school. He worked hard as a nurse to put her through medical school. She gets put through medical school, and then she leaves him for a surgeon. So he wanted her to represent him because she was a good, well-known lawyer in divorce cases. She said, no, I only represent women. So he brought a complaint to the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. He won. The Massachusetts Commissioner of Discrimination said, you can be a feminist, but you can't be a sexist. In this case, feminism would have prevailed by him winning, even though he was a male. He would have established a principle that would have helped other women. That's what Justice Ginsburg did when she was a lawyer. She used cases involving men to establish principles that would help women. It was a brilliant ploy. She was a very, very, very good lawyer. I worked with her when she was a lawyer, when she was a professor at Rutgers University. And you're not a Democrat or Republican lawyer. You're not a male or female lawyer. You're not a Jewish or a Christian or Muslim lawyer. You're a lawyer. You're a surgeon. You do your job, and your job is to proudly represent your clients, even if you disagree with them, even if you think that they're guilty, even if you think they deserve to be put in prison. I've had cases where I've won and I went home at night and I couldn't sleep because I wanted that guy in jail. I wanted to lose, but I did the best I could to win. I'm sure there are doctors who have said the same. When you have horrible, horrible, miserable people who come for medical treatment, you treat them. I'm not saying you treat Hitler. I'm not saying you represent Hitler. There are extremes to which nobody is obliged to go. So, look, I think she did a very good job. I give her an A- with grade inflation, probably a B+ by the standards that I used to grade by, because, you know, I think she was too apologetic about who she defended and why she defended them. Her answers otherwise were pretty good. She was evasive on some issues. You know, she picked and chose what she wanted to answer. And some of the questioning was good. Some of the questioning by some Democrats was good, and even some Republicans. I think Senator Sasse asked some good questions, but then there were these outrageous questions about child pornography. Now, of course, you're going to say, oh, of course, Dershowitz is going to defend child pornography because he's a pedophile. We know that. He was on Lolita Island. He was on Pedophile Island. No, no, no. Never on Jeffrey Epstein's island with any women. I was never on his plane with any women. I was on his island once with my wife, my daughter. I have proof beyond any doubt from the mouth of his lawyer, from the mouth of his her best friends that she never met me. She never heard of me. It's a completely made up story. So I'm not going to stop saying what I believe, even about child pornography, about pedophiles, just because people say you're a pedophile. No, I'm not going to let that influence my decision. I thought what some of the Republicans did today was outrageous. What they did was basically they blamed her for the people that she sentenced. She had to sentence them under the rules that were set out by Congress and set out by the Sentencing Commission. And the job of the judge is to evaluate all the evidence, listen to the defense, listen to the prosecution, listen to the probation department, make a distinction between people who watch child pornography, which is a crime, and people who actually engage in hurting children, or people, a difference between people who make the films than people who circulate the films or trade the films. They're all guilty. But when it comes to sentencing, there's an enormous difference between somebody who actually had sex with a young child and somebody who got his jollies out of watching a film that was made 5 years ago. The Supreme Court actually considered that case a few years ago. There was a situation where somebody made cartoons of child pornography. Sounds pretty disgusting. People will do anything. But it went up to the United States Supreme Court. And the defense argued, interestingly enough, that there's a big difference between films of child pornography, which actually involve children. They actually involve the commission of a serious crime. You can't make a child porn film without using actual children or filming actual children. The distinction between that, which is a very serious crime, and the crime of making or watching a cartoon. Now, the reason the cartoons were made illegal is the argument is if you've watched child pornography, you're going to participate in it. And the Supreme Court said no. No, it was unconstitutional. It was a violation of the First Amendment to punish people for making cartoon child pornography or watching child pornography, which is cartoon, or circulating child pornography, which is cartoon. I had a case some years ago. I represented a child pornographer and I got them off. This was a kid in medical school, Dartmouth Medical School, I think it was. He was a camp counselor for 13-year-old boys, 14-year-old boys, and the camp had a tradition, it was an all-boys camp, of skinny dipping, of going to the lake and swimming naked. And he filmed them, 13, 14-year-old boys, naked, and they arrested him on child pornography grounds. We won the case. Obviously, it wasn't pornography, but nonetheless, they prosecuted him, and they sentenced him, I think, I don't remember, 5 or 6 years in prison for taking films. Did he get his jollies out of it? I don't know. Did he enjoy it? I don't know. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything that endangered anybody. But, you know, there's a tremendous variety. There's no crime that doesn't have a tremendous variety within it, ranging from murder to you name it. Any crime is going to depend on the specific facts of the case. And there are going to be tens, you know, the first degree gangland murderer lines his people up like the St. Valentine's Massacre and kills them. And the passion murder of the man who or the woman who finds his spouse in bed with somebody else and becomes outraged and kills. There are enormous variations, and that's what sentencing's all about. And I have to tell you, these Republicans, some of them behaved outrageously. First of all, a Supreme Court justice has nothing to do with sentencing. No Supreme Court justice ever sentences anybody. So even if you came to the conclusion that she's a bad sentencer, that doesn't make her a bad Supreme Court justice. She might be a great Supreme Court justice. Look, there was one other thing that bothered me, and that has to do with sentencing. She said that her role model was a woman I knew quite well, Judge Constance Baker Motley, the first Black woman ever to serve on the federal courts. I'd actually worked with Judge Motley when she was a lawyer at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She was a great lawyer. She helped draft the brief that won Brown versus Board of Education. She was a phenomenal lawyer. She was not a good judge. As a judge, she was a terrible sentencer. I can tell you, I've spoken to many criminal defense lawyers. They won't say so publicly because lawyers don't like to attack judges. But I know from my experience from speaking to a lot of people that Judge Motley was terrible at sentencing. She gave extremely high sentences to people for what were relatively minor crimes. If they were wealthy and if they, you know, were establishment people, she would always throw the book at them. In fact, it got so bad that the government would use her as part of their plea bargain. They would say, look, if you plead now, you're not going to get Motley as your sentencer. But if you don't plead, you might get Motley as your sentencer. So I was disappointed that she used Judge Motley. You know, you can be a great, great lawyer and a not so great judge. You can be a mediocre lawyer and a great judge. The combination of being a great lawyer like Louis Brandeis, Arthur Goldberg, and then becoming a great justice is going to be rare. Earl Warren was not a great lawyer, became a great, great chief justice. And I think that John Roberts was a great lawyer, probably one of the best lawyers ever to serve on the Supreme Court. And I think he's a very good chief justice. So, you know, these matters vary. You get some who are very good at lawyers, not so good at judges, very bad as lawyers, much, much better as justices. So you get a mix. The same thing is true with senators. Some very good senators do some awful things. And I think some of the senators during these hearings just did not perform well. Going into the details of these child porn cases and making it sound like she supported them. I mean, she's a mother. She hates child pornography. She hates child pornographers, but she's a judge. When you put that robe on, you know, you have to follow the law. And they were just appealing for votes, these senators. They were going into such detail as to what the film showed. These are films that probably the judge herself never even saw. She probably just read a report about them. She may have seen some of them, obviously. But she has to take into account the role of the defendant in the film. Did he make the film? Did he just view the film? Did he not make the film? Did he view it and then did he trade it with some other people? You have to take all these things into account, and they just didn't do it. And I just think that the behavior of some of the senators was not distinguished, and didn't distinguish the Senate, and any more than what the Democrats did with Judge Kavanaugh. That was just awful, based on vague, speculative notions about what he may have done as a 15-year-old high school student at a drunken party. And of course, the great lawyer Avenatti came forward with a woman who accused him, who it turns out probably never met him, never heard of him. But, you know, if Avenatti and the woman wanted publicity, that was a case to jump on the publicity bandwagon. But the Democrats in that case acted disgracefully. And the whole confirmation process has become awful. It started way back a long time ago. Look, I didn't favor the appointment of some justices, Clarence Thomas. I didn't favor his appointment. I didn't think he was the most qualified person for the job at the time. But I certainly didn't favor bringing out whether or not he liked pornographic films or talked about pubic hair on a Coke bottle. How does that relate to whether you're going to be a justice? The justice should talk about your approach to cases. I thought that Judge Jackson handled that question very well. What's your judicial philosophy? You know, I don't come to cases with a big judicial philosophy. I come with a methodology. Here's the way I decide cases. And she was very credible about that. Justice Harlan approached cases that way. He didn't come with a big judicial philosophy. On the other hand, there are judges who come with a judicial philosophy. Hugo Black came with a judicial philosophy. Antonin Scalia comes with a judicial philosophy. Justice Alito, to some degree, comes with a judicial philosophy. But I think judges without a philosophy can do great things, great justice. Great justices have also come with a philosophy. Louis Brandeis had a philosophy, a very important philosophy of judicial restraint, which he had enormous influence on the Supreme Court. Olive Warren Loans, on the other hand, didn't have a judicial philosophy. He had a philosophy of life. He didn't have a judicial philosophy. He decided cases as they came to him. It's very hard to, even after many years of analyzing Olive Wendell Holmes Jr.'s opinions, very hard to classify a philosophy. There are changing approaches over his long judicial career, which brings me to another point. You know, there's been a lot of talk about court packing. I'm against it. But there's a need for some changes. I don't think judges should serve for life. I don't think Judge Jackson, who's now, I don't know what, 51, should be on the court 40 years from now. I think popes, kings, and queens can serve for life. That's okay. But I don't think anybody in a democracy should serve for life. But I wouldn't have age limitations. Why wouldn't I have age limitations? Some states do, 70, 75. Big mistake. If you have an age limitation, then presidents and governors will appoint 30-year-olds so that they can serve for 35 years. You have time limitations. Nobody should serve for more than 20 years. If you wanted to substitute 15, I'd be happy. A 15-year career on the bench is fine. A 20-year career is a lot. 25 is too much. So I would like to see the Constitution amended. Remember, too, that when the Constitution was enacted, most judges were appointed maybe at age 40, and they lived to age 55. Not too many people lived to 60 in those days. You know, we think of so many of our American founders, both Jefferson and Adams, lived forever by the standards of the day. Washington, on the other hand, died relatively young, as did some other people. But the average age expectancy was below 60. So God imposed a restriction on service on the court. Well, God has eased up on us these days. And I'm 83 years old. Had I been appointed to a court at age 60, I, you know, served 23 years. Olive Wendell Holmes was appointed at age 60. Louis Brandeis was appointed at age 60. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was appointed at age 60. You never hear a judge today being appointed at age 60. It's too young, too old, too old. We don't want you to serve only 20 years. We want you to serve 30 or 40 years. So I do think that a lot can be done to improve the judiciary. And I think a lot could be done to improve the nature of confirmation hearings. I mean, the first step has to be to depoliticize appointments. I do think the best way of approaching this is to have the Attorney General of the United States submit a list of the 25 or 30 most qualified people in America to be on the Supreme Court. Those people can include sitting judges, professors, practicing lawyers, politicians. Hugo Black was appointed from the Senate of the United States. Earl Warren was appointed as the former governor of California. And the president should be presented with a list of the 25 or 30 most qualified people in the world. Any such list, if done fairly, would include people of both genders, every race, every background. And then the president should pick from that list. And he should I think it should require a two-thirds vote. It used to require a 60 majority vote before the filibuster was destroyed for judicial appointments. I would go back to that. I don't think anybody should serve for life. I don't think anybody should serve for life at all. But if you're going to serve for life, you don't serve with a 50-50 split, the tie vote broken by the vice president. Not even clear it can be done constitutionally, but let's assume it's 51-49. I don't think you get a life appointment for a 51-49 vote. I think if you're going to get a life appointment, it should be at least 60 people. And so there's a lot of changes that could be done, and I hope they will be done over time. The letters keep coming in. I have to tell you, I'm so disappointed with so many of the letters that just represent kind of very hard right, almost neo-fascist views on the part of some of you. It may be mostly the extremist right and the non-extremists, because I have a lot of viewers don't bother to vote and write. So I wish more of you would write representing more points of view. I'll just read you some of them. Anyone who protects pedophiles is no different than a pedophile because they're enablers that speak volumes about their moral character. Is that true? That everyone who defends Republicans is a Republican? Anyone who defends Donald Trump is a Trump supporter, and that speaks volumes about their character? Anybody who defended a communist during the 1950s is a communist, and that speaks volumes about their morals? It's just wrong. Was John Adams a murderer of Americans? Was Abraham Lincoln a murderer? He represented murderers. Was Thurgood Marshall a rapist? He represented convicted rapists who were African Americans. No, you're a lawyer. Would this guy say any doctor who treated a pedophile as a pedophile because they're enablers? After all, if they're not healthy, they can't engage in pedophilia. So, you know, this is just so un-American. It's so un-American. All right. Legitimate case or not, she'll be confirmed. She already has all the votes she needs. You know the Dems will all vote for her. And what with this systematic racism at all? We have lost just about everything because we're stuck to the high ground. We better start fighting fire with fire, or we conservatives will just be a memory. You guys started the fire. Garland, remember him? Highly qualified, sitting judge, moderate, not a radical. You didn't even give him a hearing because it was the same year as there was going to be a presidential election. Then along come Barrett. She's 6 weeks before the presidential. Oh, no. We forgot about that. No, that was different because we didn't control the Senate then. We control the Senate now. So we'll rush through Barrett. Barrett's a good justice. She was a good choice, a good nominee. I wouldn't have picked her, but I'm not the president. The idea that this different rules apply and that you have to fight fire with fire, you guys started the fire. And now I would like to try to contribute to help putting it out, but it's not easy. The only reason the Democrats ever won was fraud. Well, you know, look at the evidence. First of all, let's start with the popular vote. Democrats won 8 million more votes than Republicans. Many more Americans wanted Biden to be president than Trump. Maybe I'll put it negatively. Many more Americans didn't want Trump to be president more than they didn't want Biden to be president. Whichever way you slice it, Trump lost overwhelmingly both times the popular vote. But we don't live under the popular vote. We live under the Electoral College. And so Biden also won the electoral vote. Even if you think there was wrongdoing in Pennsylvania, and I do think there was wrongdoing in Pennsylvania, I've said that. I don't think Pennsylvania governor had the right to extend absentee voting beyond what the legislature had done. If I were on the Supreme Court, I would have voted to recount the Pennsylvania votes without counting the late ballots. Biden still would have won, but at least there would have been more acceptance of the rule of law. But even if Trump won Pennsylvania and Arizona and Georgia, he still loses the election. So, you know, there might have been fraud. I'm now representing MyPillow and Mike Lindell in a defamation suit, because whether Mike's right or wrong, he has the right to say what he wants to say. You guys have the right to say that the only reason the Dems won was fraud. You have a right to say it. You're just wrong. Biden won the election reasonably and decently, and he won it by an overwhelming majority of both the both the electoral college vote and the popular vote. So my next question is, why? Why do we have such partisanship and such division? You would think that while a war is raging in Ukraine, while people are being murdered by a true tyrant and dictator, Putin, that maybe we could come together. I think the vast majority of us, Republicans, Democrats, radicals, conservatives, left, right, male, female, black, white, I think we all want to see Russia defeated. I think we all want to see Ukraine saved. I think we all want to see people stop killing other people, the Russians stop using these extraordinary weapons directed against civilians. We can come together on that issue. I think we can come together on a lot of issues, but we seem to be living at a time when we thrive not only on our differences, but on making the differences so extreme that we just stop reasoning with each other. This show is dedicated to reason. This show is dedicated to trying to analyze issues. When I analyze people, no one is 100% perfect, and rarely is somebody 100% wrong. You know I'm a big supporter of President Zelensky, but I criticized the recent speech he gave in which he suggested that somehow the Ukrainians did good things for the Jews during the Holocaust. It just was not true. And I criticized them. And I've criticized President Biden over and over and over again. And I criticize Democrats on the Judiciary Committee. And I criticize Republicans. I'm an equal opportunity critic. And this show is dedicated to making sure that all sides of all issues are presented. And that's why I love to read letters. But I'm not getting letters that present all sides of every issue. What I'm getting are letters that just demonize all Democrats and praise all Republicans. It's a conundrum. I'm a liberal Democrat. This show expresses my views, my critical views that come from a liberal Democratic perspective. Why do so many of you who watch it insist on expressing extreme views, one-sided views, black and white views that just make so little sense? You know, people who defend pedophiles are just like the pedophiles. No, they're not. They're decent lawyers who contribute to the community and work hard and love their families and never hurt anybody. Yeah, they defend people who you don't like and I don't like, but they're not just like the people that they defend. Why do you say something like that? Why do you say that you're sure that the election was determined by fraud? Why don't you look at the evidence and say there may have been some fraud, there may have been some miscounting, but if you look at all the evidence, it certainly appears that the that Biden won the election fair and square. No, you insist. If it's Republican, it's all right. If it's Democrat, it's all wrong. Look, the other side does the same thing. What happened to Yale Law School the other day when two conservatives were trying to have a discussion about transgender issues? There are difficult issues. Like today, Judge Jackson correctly said, I'm not going to tell you who is a woman. I'm not going to define who is a woman. Cruz pressed her very, very hard. We live in a time when gender is no longer a simple issue of yes or no. People who were born male have become female, really become female, have lived lives 20 years, 30 years, 40 years as a different gender. That's the reality. So, yeah, she didn't want to tell you who was a woman. She's the first black woman on the Supreme Court. And so Cruz pressed her, well, you're a woman, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. What will happen when the first transgender justice serves on the Supreme Court? What if the most qualified person in the United States to serve on the Supreme Court was born a woman and became a man, or was born a man and became a woman? Would that be a disqualification? Of course not. Even those of you who argue, and I understand this argument I understand, I don't agree with it, but I understand it, that a man who became a woman and then wins a swimming competition because he used to have testosterone and his muscles are stronger and it's unfair. Okay, put that aside. There's no advantage to being a man or a woman on the Supreme Court. Testosterone doesn't matter on the Supreme Court. So would you discriminate against somebody who changed genders if they wanted to serve as a judge? No, no, that's bigotry. People have the right to choose how to live their lives. You know, Cruz asked a series of absurd questions. I hope he didn't learn them from me. He was my student, where he said, well, if a man has the right to choose to be a woman, do I, as a Latino person, have the right to be Asian? No, no, you don't. You can't change into somebody who's Asian. You can marry somebody who's Asian and live an Asian life and be part of Asian culture. But no, you can't. You can't do that. You can convert. You can be born a Jew and become a Catholic. You can be born a Catholic and become a Jew. There's certain things you can change. Certain things you can't. We used to think that gender was one of them. It turns out it's not. It turns out you can change gender and you can live a perfectly happy and good life. We have two friends who have grandchildren who have changed genders, and in both cases, they're living much, much, much happier lives with the gender change than they were before. Who am I to tell them they can't do that? And these are conservatives who say the state should keep out of your homes. The state should, well, yeah, the state should keep out of your issue of gender change. It should keep out of issues of whether you have sex with people of the same sex or a different sex. If you're a true conservative who believes in limited government, then you should believe in limited government in that respect as well. The Conservative Party in England is consistent. It believes in all of that. It supports all these social issues that the right in America doesn't support. The Conservative Party would not have asked the kinds of questions that were asked today of Judge Jackson involving gender and transgender. So let's try to be a little consistent. You know, it was Emerson who said, consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds. That's the way he's quoted. But the actual quote is foolish consistency. Foolish consistency. I don't think it's foolish consistency to demand that if you're a conservative who wants small government, and wants to keep the government out of the lives of individuals, that you be consistent and keep them out of the lives of individuals you don't like as well. All right, a couple of days off now. We can all cool off, but use the occasion to write me. Please write me sensible letters, nuanced letters, not only letters that take extreme positions. And if you can't do without me for 3 or 4 days, go to Locals every single day. I express my views on Locals, and you can tell me what you think of what I say on Locals as well. See you next week.